Good evening. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In the next hour, we're talking with three Democrats who have thrown their hat into the race for the 7th Congressional District. And up first, we hear from Phil Salamone. We hear about who he is, where he's from, and why he hopes to be the next congressman for Central and Northern Wisconsin.
I grew up in New York. I went to college, undergraduate in New York. And 39 years ago, probably before you were born, I come out here to go to grad school. And I've been here ever since. I've raised my family here. My parents were working class. My dad was a plumber and then a truck driver. My mom was a seamstress, but she raised us, you know, when didn't work. And, you know, in the times that we were raised, my dad, being just a working guy, and my mom being a stay-at-home mom, we were able to afford a summer cottage. Can you imagine on that one salary? Have times changed or what? Huh? He was in a union, of course. He was a Teamster, truck driver. You know, my wife and I were both professionals. I was a union rep for AFSCME for 20 years, and my wife was a social worker in Marathon County, and we don't have any summer home.
Well, I appreciate your time talking and learning more about you. And, you know, I just was curious why you've decided to, you know, put your hat into the race now and run against the incumbent.
Well, I'm running because of what's going on in Congress. Does anybody like what's going on in Congress? Nothing or bad things? You know, I mean, it's a do-nothing Congress. 90% of the people or 80% of the people don't like what's going on in Congress. I would like to do some different things or promote some things that aren't being promoted and not do some things that Sean Duffy's doing. I mean, Sean Duffy is an abomination of Dave Obey's legacy. You know, Dave was a tireless advocate for healthcare reform and for many progressive issues. And I would like someone to point one great accomplishment in the 6 years he's been in. Has there been one accomplishment that he's had? I don't know. Some name some things maybe. But anyway, I'm running mostly to replace him. But I have some ideas on what I'd like to do and like to push, if you want to hear them.
Yeah, I was curious if you could be more specific about, you know, what it is that Duffy's supporting that you wouldn't support or vice versa, and then what you want to push.
I'll give you an example, a very clean example of something I just read the other day. You know, they say Obama, the Republicans in Congress have said that Obama's exceeded his authority. And mostly what they were mad about was the fact that he gave the employers an extra year to incorporate the ACA, which actually was good for employers, you know, struggling employers. And they were suing him. Actually, they wanted to impeach him. Boehner talked him down to suing him. $350,000 spent on that political theater, which is all it really was. It's not going anywhere. Got struck down. It's not, I mean, that's an example. He has been, Duffy has received in this campaign cycle $300,000 from banks and insurance companies, financial institutions. He is chair of a committee that oversees the federal agencies like FDIC, Federal Reserve, that those federal agencies that regulate banks. And what does he do? Since 2010 or 11, he's taken $1 million. I mean, it may be legal, but it sure don't smell right to me. And it's, I don't know how that helps anybody in the Northwoods unless they're a banker. I just don't, it just doesn't smell right. Let's put it that way. It may be legal if there's no quid pro quo, it probably is legal. But in any event, Duffy, what else has he done? He hasn't really done much. I mean, the Congress hasn't done much. I think a lot needs to be done. I'd like to see the minimum wage raised. I'd like to see some improvements to the ACA, which it could use. All they want to do is repeal, and no replacement. And what happens with all the people that have pre-existing conditions, or young people who are under 26? Tens of millions of people that have gotten health insurance now that there's the ACA. What happens with all of those? You know, he wants to repeal them. He's voted 50 times. I mean, Dave Obey was given the gavel to gavel that in because he had been fighting so hard for that for his 40 years in Congress, you know.
Just on the points that you mentioned, Phil, how much would you like to see the minimum wage raised to? And then what changes would you like to see to ACA?
You know, okay, you want to let's focus on wages. I was a union rep, and I look at wages and a lot of the things that are going in front of Congress, like that people are talking about these days, like family leave and paid family leave and those kinds of things. Those are things, and higher wages, health insurance, are things that we used to negotiate with unions. And now that they've basically wiped out unions or they've weakened them so much, we have to do these things through legislation now. So I guess if that's the way we've got to do them, that's the way that we've got to do them. People need them. As far as the minimum wage, how high would I like to see it?
Yeah.
You know, in Europe, they have a pretty high minimum wage, and, you know, I don't. They say it only adds a few cents to a Big Mac, and it can be done without really. And the other thing is, get this, people who go to hamburger places and fast food are the exact same people that earn the minimum wage or are low-wage employees. They would have more money to spend. I mean, we are each other's consumers, you know what I mean? And how high would I like to raise it? I don't think $15 is out of line. I mean, in today's economy, $15 an hour is what, $30,000 a year? That's not exactly windfall profits.
You also mentioned the Affordable Care Act. You said you'd like to see changes. And what kind of changes would you like to see with the Affordable Care Act?
You know, I was in favor of the single-payer plan, and I would like to see Medicare for all. I think it makes the most sense. I mean, the rest of Bernie Sanders is right about this one too. I mean, we're still the only industrialized nation that does not have health care as a right. I don't know why do we look at health care any different from education? And by the way, education is another issue that I'd like to get to. But we accept free education. Healthcare is as important, if not more important, than education to a society. And not only that, but everybody pays for everybody else's healthcare. I mean, you go to an emergency room if you don't have insurance, and you get the care anyway. And guess what? If you don't have the money and you don't have the insurance, the people who are insured pay. So, I mean, it's a crazy system that we've got. Many people are already covered by government plans, whether they're government employees or they're veterans or those kinds of things. I think a single payer makes the most sense. I would have favored that. I think the Affordable Care Act is a step in the right direction, but it's not. It may not be. You know, I think there can be improvements. And what do they want to do? They want to go the opposite way and repeal it. It's no replacement.
You also mentioned education, and what were you thinking about that? I mean, you liken yourself to Bernie Sanders, and he's saying free education.
I'll tell you what. You know what? I've done some substitute teaching in my day, and, you know, I try to stay away from things that might be controversial, but when I'm in a high school, I'll say to some students sometimes, I'll say, well, I ask them a question. I ask them this question. We accept, and we have since I was a little kid and for probably much longer than that, K through 12 being free and universal. Why do we stop at 12? Especially now when you need more. And it's not just college, four-year college. I think we need trade schools and tech education. I mean, I mean, we are investing in the human capital of our populace. I mean, European countries are way ahead of us on this, and they're just going to advance. And our students, and I say to these students, why do we accept K through 12 being free? And then everybody says it's okay that you go into debt up to your eyeballs. My son is 36 years old. He's just barely getting his college loans paid. I mean, it's and then worse yet, that's another thing I'm getting to. And then the pensions are gone now. I think we need to improve Social Security. I mean, because they just barely get their college loans paid, and then they go into a system where the pensions have disappeared. And Social Security wasn't intended to be your total sole source of income, but it is now because pensions, you know, employers have walked away from their obligations with pensions. And again, that's something the unions used to be providing for workers, but, you know, we all know what's happened to the unions.
You said you were a union rep, and can you just tell me a little bit too more about your work background?
Okay, sure. Well, when I got my bachelor's in New York in political science, and then I got interested in labor relations, and I applied to Wisconsin. This is kind of an interesting story. I applied to Wisconsin because they didn't have a filing fee on the application, and for grad school. And I wanted to actually go to Cornell, and I didn't get into Cornell. So I did get into Wisconsin. So I came here, and I wanted to work for a union all the time I was in grad school. Most of the other students wanted to work for management, and they all got very good jobs. But I had a hard time finding a job with a union because they were mostly hiring from their rank and file. And so I got a job at the General Motors plant in Janesville, and I worked 7 years on the assembly line there, and I got active in the union there, and I became the secretary of the union. I was elected. It was a big union, 6,500 members, and I was on the executive board, and I also worked in Detroit for a while with UAW in the research department, and then I got a job for AFSCME as a servicing rep, which is what I really wanted to do. And I did that for 20 years, from 1986 through 2006, and basically negotiating contracts. I negotiated over 300 contracts and did about 200 labor arbitrations, and basically fought for the stuff I believed in, protecting and promoting the rights of workers. And since retiring, I've done a lot of volunteer work. I'm a farm mediator for the Department of Agriculture. I'm that's volunteer, by the way. My wife and I own a business. We have 15 rental units. She mostly takes care of that, and she does a very good job. And we'd live in any one of them, by the way. They're very nice. And what else?
I'm bad at math, but maybe 7 months away from the election. And so why wait until now to announce, or, you know, do you feel like you can still have a fighting chance given the role that money can play in elections?
Well, I do. And I'll tell you why I really do is because I do believe that people are seeing the difference between Democrats and Republicans very clearly this year in these debates. And we're talking about issues. They're talking about other stuff. I mean, it's kind of self-evident. I do think that there's an opportunity for Democrats this year that they haven't had. 1964, again, showing my age, Barry Goldwater ran. And let me tell you, Barry Goldwater was considered an extremist at the time, and we, not only Democrats win Congress, and he was beat by a landslide, but it was a realignment. I mean, there was for 40 years that Democrats controlled Congress. Well, let me tell you, Barry Goldwater looks like a statesman, a paradigm of sanity compared to these guys, I'm telling you. The Republicans right now. So I do feel that there's an opportunity for Democrats down ticket. I'm waiting to see if how this all turns out and who Sean Duffy's going to support, whether he's going to support Trump or not support Trump, and whatever he does on that. But I'm not going to support Trump. I'll support whoever the Democrat is, for sure.
Prefer to support Hillary or Bernie at this point?
I'm supporting Bernie right now, but I'm not I tell you what worries me about Bernie, and this is a political concern I have. You see the kids, you know, mostly young people who support Bernie, and they're so idealistic, and they got stars in their eyes, and I would hate to see them disappointed and turned off on the whole system, especially if it's done with this superdelegate business. I would hate to see that happen. And especially if they stayed home, that would even be worse, you know, because they got turned off. I hate to, you know, when I was in 1968, Gene McCarthy was running, and that kind of thing happened, and there was, you know, the stakes were pretty high then, you know. I mean, we had the Vietnam War, and it turned into a melee at the Democratic Party convention. And I don't think that's going to happen, but I am concerned that the young people these days, the idealistic young people, which I love them that they are, and I support the same things they do, but I'm worried that they may be turned off by the process. That's what concerns me most right now.
So if you're elected in November and become congressman of the 7th Congressional District, what would be your priorities, you know, like day one in office? What would you look to do?
Well, I would like to see Social Security improved. Again, pensions have gone by the wayside, private pensions especially. I think if you took the cap off the $118,000 maximum, they shouldn't be paying the same. Someone making $10 million shouldn't pay the same as somebody who's making $118,000. I think that the cap can be taken off and it can be improved and buttressed so that people who just rely on Social Security would have, you know, more resources.
Well, I really appreciate your time, Phil. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break for these announcements, and when we come back, we'll speak with Marathon County Board Supervisor Joel Lewis about why he's running for Congress. I'm Danielle Kading, and this is Hear Me Out. Good evening, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're talking with three Democrats who have thrown their hat into the race for the 7th Congressional District. Up next, we hear from Joel Lewis, a self-employed home care worker who hopes to be a voice for the working man in Washington.
I was born and raised here in the Wausau area. I was actually born in Wausau, and then my mom was a single mother most of my life, and she moved out to Rib Mountain by the time I was about four. And she was a single swing shift factory working mother. She actually worked at Wausau Paper Mill here. But, I mean, one thing I was really impressed about growing up was that whether she had a mate or not during the time, she was always able to afford the mortgage on her house, the medical bills, dental bills. As far as I know, she spent very little time on food stamps or any kind of assistance. And this is while my dad was in the Marines, so she had very little help. She had daycare, she had to pay for it, that kind of thing. And, you know, in my lifetime, I've watched those possibilities go away. She got that job without a high school diploma, you know, and was making sometimes 20 to 30 bucks an hour, depending on if it was time and a half or whatnot. And so I guess that's my biggest concern. That's why I first got involved in local politics. And my wife and I have actually fought for the minimum wage issue for almost 6 years now, some paid, some unpaid. But it's because of that very thing, because folks cannot get, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of good jobs that you can get straight out of high school. It seems you have to go to college. And if you don't have family members who can help you, which I'm very blessed with, but most of the people I know do not have that. Most of the people that I know have to take out huge student loans at ridiculous interest rates. Some of them are working two or more jobs while trying to raise a child on top of it. And I just think this is unacceptable in a country that calls itself free. And if our elected leaders aren't going to, you know, look at those issues.
And can you tell me, too, what your priorities are that you're running on or what your platform is? I mean, you mentioned minimum wage. So is jobs pretty much the platform that you're running on?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's just jobs. I would say economic inequality overall. And the reason I say that is I think that it's more than just a jobs issue. It's also in our rural areas. It's access to rural broadband. And one idea I heard, because rural broadband is quite an expensive venture, one idea I heard that we could use in the interim is some kids are being sent home with Wi-Fi hotspots if they live in one of these internet dead zones. And so I think that's something we need to explore, because more and more children are being expected to use iPads for their homework and the internet for their homework. I mean, having two teenagers, I constantly see them needing to use the internet. And so I think that's something we really got to look at, because we have to make sure all of our kids and our businesses kind of have an equal shot at being successful. And if we're going to be in an internet age, so I mean, I think all of those things fall under economic inequality. And then in addition, some of our criminal justice issues, you know, here in Marathon County, I've been on the county board for 2 years and I just won a second term. And one of the biggest things we talk about is having to build a new jail in the future. And if you look at what the majority of folks are in jail for, it's nonviolent drug offenses or alcohol, which I would also call a nonviolent drug offense. And so I think all of these things fall under economic inequality. I think if we really look at that issue and we get good paying jobs and we expand access to areas that are having trouble, and if we work with our criminal justice systems to have a little more compassion for folks with mental illness instead of treating them like hardened criminals, I think that all of these different types of aspects will help the problem.
And you said you've served on the county board for 2 years?
Correct.
And so are there other offices that you've held?
It's the only elected office I've held, you know, in public office.
Okay.
I did while I was going to college. I was elected, you know, to our human services club and things like that. I'm also on the board of directors as a consumer board member for the Bridge Community Health Clinic.
Could you just give me kind of a rundown on your feelings about, first off, on health care?
Sure. I want to focus on mental health care right now. So I think one thing that we're really lacking in the 7th Congressional District is qualified professionals to work with folks who are struggling with addiction or a lot of times some other underlying mental health issue that existed before the addiction. And I think that our Department of Social Services and our police departments are feeling completely overwhelmed and in many ways are not probably trained or staffed properly enough to deal with these issues. For instance, we recently transferred a position from the Sheriff's Department over to the Department of Social Services to deal with the influx of children who are, you know, being left alone after a drug bust or something, you know, where there's heroin or meth. And so I think it's very obvious that we need to approach this from a mental health standpoint more so than a criminal justice standpoint. And I guess one great example comes from WAOW, the comments of a girl that got caught here in Wausau with cocaine in her home. And originally they were going for a child wellness check. And they got in there and they found dog feces all over the house. And, I mean, the picture they painted was disgusting, you know. And so, you know, obviously the reaction from folks in WAOW was, oh, my God, this girl should never have her kids again. What a sick person. She needs to be put in prison for life. I mean, the things people were saying, I was blown away by. And so I jumped on there and I said, look, I understand that you feel disgusted for the situation these kids were in, but if this woman ever has a hope of getting better, she better not see these comments. And people kind of blew up on me. I said, look, our job as a community should be to figure out why this girl ended up in this position, not to attack her, not to put her up as a poster child, but to actually figure out why did you end up here? What can we as a community do to make sure this happens to less mothers and fathers.
Right, so because, you know, judgment doesn't really solve the issue. It just exacerbates the problem.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in many ways, I feel our leaders are to blame for this culture existing, because they do tend to speak from a punishment, go get them type of mentality. And I agree, if it's a bank robber, let's go get them. But if it's a drug addict, it's a different story.
Well, what about for people using drugs who often break the law because they're trying to support their habit? I mean, should we not prosecute them for the crimes that they've committed as a result of their addiction?
I think that there's a fine line there, but based on our constitutional rights, I think once you start to infringe upon someone else's freedom and safety, then that is a larger issue. I do believe, you know, certain drugs like meth and heroin can be more likely to lead a person to, you know, say robbery or prostitution and other crimes for profit because of the cost of the drugs. So I think that is something we need to take into consideration in sentencing. However, if you're taking a drug and you're basically hurting yourself, I think that we need to approach that differently. Now, if you've gotten to the point where you're stealing or you're robbing banks or you're involved in violent crime, I do believe that's a larger issue. And, you know, I think that the goal is to protect the public.
Are there other aspects of healthcare that you would like to focus on throughout your campaign?
Yeah, I think that with the Affordable Care Act, I really would like to get a truly objective, you know, standpoint from folks. So while I'm out traveling the 26 counties within the district, well, 26 and a half, I think. But anyway, while I'm out traveling those, I want to try to talk to folks, particularly small business owners and minimum wage workers, because as far as I know, those are the two populations that were probably most negatively affected by not really the Affordable Care Act, but by our governor's unwillingness to accept the Medicaid funds offered under it. I know that is what hurt the minimum wage workers. And then as far as small business owners, I'd like to hear a little bit more about whether or not it's been a struggle or whether it's been positive, because it's hard to know, it's hard to separate fact from fiction on the news regarding the Affordable Care Act. And all I really know is what I know when I helped people enroll in the marketplace during the first enrollment.
And you yourself are a home health care worker, self-employed?
Correct, yeah. So I'm home care rather than home health care.
Okay.
Because it's more like cutting firewood and mowing lawn and helping put in and maintain an organic garden. So this is for my grandparents. They're in their mid to late 80s. And I was laid off from a job a little over a year ago that paid $50,000 a year with benefits, and really struggled to find a job that could replace that income in this area. And so my grandparents said, well, we really need a lot more help out here. So they basically help compensate our family for our time that we spend out there.
And so, you know, just is there anything first that you would like to add about health care and what you are campaigning on related to that issue?
Yeah, I think another issue is the cost of prescription drugs. I myself haven't been affected by that, but I know my grandparents are. I mean, my grandmother will call me sometimes, and they did pretty well for themselves, like, financially. So when they call me and tell me that a drug is expensive, I believe it. And my grandma will call and ask for, you know, if I know of any other remedies that she could try before she tries a pill. And so I think that's an issue, or where you have senior citizens cutting their pills in half. And, you know, I think what we have to say about the healthcare situation is that not very many people in America make enough money to afford the cost of healthcare. That is the problem. And to solve that problem is not an easy one. And we need all hands on deck to fix it. And we can't have this kind of partisan divide attacking each other, because there's folks that are literally hanging in the balance while they decide what they're going to do. I'll tell you straight out, I'm a supporter of universal health care, but I know under this current political climate, you know, I mean, with as many members of Congress and Senate as we have opposed to that kind of idea, I know it's maybe not going to happen anytime soon.
And as far as jobs, you know, you mentioned the minimum wage, and I'm just wondering, you know, I'm guessing that you are supporting or advocating for an increase of the minimum wage?
Correct.
Any particular amount that you'd like to see the minimum wage increase to?
Okay, well, I'll be real blunt with you. The job that I had that paid me well, I was paid to fight for 15 in a union and to organize fast food and retail workers and other low-wage workers who worked for multi-billion-dollar corporations to do the same. However, I have a lot of friends who are small business owners, and I realize that, you know, mainly because they've reached out to me, that they cannot afford a $15 wage overnight. They believe the Walmarts and the McDonald's can, but they don't believe they can. And so I think it's a complicated issue, and it's not something that we can just say, hey, 15 across the board. I'm in favor of looking at the United Way life reports for the counties that have them. Here in Marathon County, it says that in a household of one at 40 hours a week, you would need to make $11.30 an hour. And so in my mind, if you are in a household of one at 40 hours a week and you're making less than that, that is wrong, and it's, in my mind, maybe even criminal, because now you're forced into the welfare line to ask for food stamps and Badger Care. And in my mind, those public support programs were put there for folks who can't find meaningful employment. And I also support Craig Culver. I got the privilege of catching him on Wisconsin Public Radio, I want to say 2 years ago approximately. And they said that my name was Lewis, not Joel Lewis. But I asked them, I said, you know, you sound like you're a very progressive man. You know, they try to make sure their food is coming from farms close by, their fish is sustainably fished, just all kinds of things that, you know, he's investing in. He's putting extra money in areas where his competitors are not. And so I brought that up, and I said, I commend you for that. And I said, you know, I'm wondering if you'll be a leader on another issue, and that is that do you believe your workers deserve a living wage rather than a minimum wage? And I couldn't believe it. He said, you know, I've been fighting for this for years. I want a two-tier system. He said, I believe that if you're between 18 and 21 and it's your first job or one of your first jobs, I'm teaching you a skill. He's like, so I don't believe you deserve 12 or 15 an hour, but you do deserve maybe 8 or 10. He said, 7.25 is definitely too low. And if you look at most of the Culver's stores, they do start most of their folks out at 9 or 10. And then he said, however, if you're over the age of 21 or you have a family or you're a skilled worker, I do believe you deserve 12 to 15 bucks an hour. And the interviewer on the radio said, wait a second, did you just say 15? And then he scaled back. He said, well, maybe 12, you know, something closer to what Obama's suggesting. But so that is what I support. And I really didn't know that I supported that until that interview with Craig Culver.
And as far as jobs, what do you see is necessary for the 7th Congressional District, or what would you like to see happen for job creation?
Well, I know there's a lot of power in TIF districts. I don't know how much they're in use throughout the rest of the district. I admit I need to get a little more educated on that, but I know how they're used within our area. And one thing that's always bothered me about this with the TIF districts is we seem to attract an awful lot of low-wage, no-benefit employers into these TIF districts. And I believe they're even considering funneling money from one district to another here to help prop up this $4.1 million unsecured loan that was given to CBL and Associates for our Wausau Center Mall at 2% interest. I mean, I look at every job in there, and it's, you know, they're all low-wage, no-benefit jobs. And I just do not understand why we should give taxpayer money to those types of employers. So I think one of the first things we could do is move around our incentives a little bit and try to help out the businesses that are taking that extra step like Craig Culver does. You know, he doesn't have to start his workers out at 9 or 10, but he chooses to. So we should reward those types of businesses and the businesses who do not choose to make that investment in their workers and essentially their communities, then I don't see why we should be giving them handouts. And, I mean, obviously raising the minimum wage is one thing, but we have to do something to make sure we cushion our small businesses. But I really think it comes down to attracting employers who pay living wages and don't give any handouts to the folks that are not willing to do that.
Related to defense, you know, we're seeing a lot of concern about terrorism and securing our border and the conflicts in the Middle East. And so what's your stance on U.S. military involvement in the Middle East? We'll start there.
Well, one thing that I've noticed is that whenever we're involved in the Middle East, it's about 5-10 years later down the road that we have to be involved in their Middle East again as a result of whatever we did the last time. And so in many ways, I believe that that's the case with ISIS, that they've kind of grown out of our activities over there in the past. I mean, I know this much. We spend nearly $1 trillion on our defense spending a year. And if you were to look at the discretionary budget, which is one-third of the overall budget, that is nearly 60% of our discretionary budget going to military versus 6% to education. And so, I mean, this does worry me a lot. Then on top of it, you have troops coming home with PTSD, addiction issues, depression, and we are not ready to deal with that either. So I think I agree that we need to have a strong defense. You know, it is a dangerous world, but we really ought to look at what are we spending on what? You know, how much are we being charged for bullets? How much are we being charged for tanks? Things like that. I mean, because based on what I know, the military pays an awful lot more for this type of stuff than a civilian would if they were out go out, buy a similar gun or similar bullets. And so we have to look at some of these things. Are they inflating costs? Are some of these contractors inflating costs? We really have to start looking at that. And I think in some ways we have to start having our allies be a part of these efforts if they're that important.
When we come back, we'll wrap up the show with Ethel Quisler on her decision to run against Republican Congressman Sean Duffy. I'm Danielle Kading, and this is Hear Me Out. Good evening, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're talking with three Democrats who have thrown their hat into the race for the 7th Congressional District. Ethel Quisler is a provider with Innovative Services out of Green Bay. She works with people who are disabled or have mental health issues, and she shares a little bit about herself and why she's running.
I am a Wausau native. I graduated from Newman High School in 1986, and our family has owned and operated a, you know, I would say, fairly successful dairy operation just north of Wausau. And it's no longer in dairy, but we do have a few cattle up there. One of my sisters has. And the family farm is still in the family.
Well, then, tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, after you graduated high school, did you go on to college then?
Immediately thereafter, yes. I had some pretty good people who had some faith in me and helped guide me in that direction. It was a difficult transition that I was going through. I am an advocate for mental health. When you live through certain things, you don't, especially as a young person, you may not identify things. And the other thing is the healthcare industry or mental health industry, they're learning things too. So like back in the 40s, they didn't really recognize when people had learning disabilities or learning issues or mental health issues. But later on, as people learned things, we were able to identify more. So, for example, I believe that my father was bipolar, and he would get in these moods where he'd get very angry and very violent. However, when you talk to him about it afterwards, he's like, "That could not be. That's not my character." You know, he just couldn't believe that, you know, he had behaved in such ways. So after my 18th birthday, my senior year, going to parochial high school, my father had he physically aggressed on me, beat me up pretty bad. And he said to me, "You know, if you don't like it, leave." And it never occurred to me I could leave, so I left. And there was a neighbor in the neighborhood, was a nurse, was friends with her daughter, Ramona Baez, and she patched me up, and neighbors kind of begged me to press charges, and I couldn't do that to my father. I understood he was sick, he was ill, he needed help. And from that point, realizing how much support I had in the community, I found a way to finish high school, paid my own tuition, did work study, and I've been fighting ever since, so to speak, or surrendering myself to figuring it out is probably a better way to talk about it. I went to the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point that summer in between high school and college. I worked for something called Project Earth, where I was a park naturalist I was a forestry major, which I did not complete. I dropped out of college three times before I finally finished, but I did do a kind of a step-by-step method where I realized I had enough credits to graduate with an associate, so I thought something's better than nothing, so I got my associate's degree. I was also already involved with being part of the national welfare reform. During those mid-90 times, I went to the parades, the demonstrations, the protests, and kids in a stroller, just took them along with me. Either it was Milwaukee, Madison, other parts of the state. And I was involved with something called the Poverty Network Initiative. We also then got noticed by the National 9-to-5 Working Women's Association, the PNI, Poverty Network Initiative. And through them, they kind of helped broker a conversation, which took us to the White House. So I was one of 12 women that was invited to the White House by Vice President Al Gore to discuss welfare reform. And I am passionate about education. I'm trying not to ramble on here, but at the same time, I have such life experiences of being just another American walking side by side with other Americans' life experiences.
So is that why you're running then? Is just kind of the experiences that you've had with, the issues that you mentioned, whether it's welfare or mental health, what is it that prompted you to run?
Quick answer to your question is yes, but there's more to it. what's prompted me to run is more of a promise I made to young people. For example, there was a group of friends of my son's that were like, you finish high school, you get that high school diploma, that GED, okay, I'll run for Congress. So I'm making good on a deal.
So someone you knew, a young person in your life, you promised them that you would run for Congress if they finished their high school education?
There are several of these young people I made the promise to, and they are reminding me I need to make good on that deal.
Why did they want that in trade, as part of this deal that you've made with them?
I have the most amazing conversations with some young people that we hit on so many topics. There's so much. There's so many issues, and some people just aren't aware. Help me out here.
So you're looking to kind of help to educate people about other life experiences that I'm getting the sense that you feel that Washington is out of touch with those experiences.
Oh, definitely. Okay. Oh, definitely. I've contributed nearly $50,000 worth of volunteer economic impact to my community. And the minimum wage is $7.25. And since 1977, non-farm worker wages, like for waitresses or, people who bus tables, that type of thing, is still at $2.70. So compared to what? People make money in many different ways. And public education is so important to help our young be able to find those paths that are going to get them to find sustainable income.
And, since you brought up the minimum wage, do you support an increase in the minimum wage then?
Absolutely. That needs to help be done in addition to other things.
And so what would you like to see then? There are talks about raising it to $15 an hour, and, what do you see that look like?
It needs to be looked at what industry. $15 an hour, a blanket statement like that, that kind of generalization, is plausible. It's commendable. But there are some industries that are not going to be able to do that. We need some big assessment done. What's reasonable? What's going to be measurable, attainable, realistic? And how can it be provided in a timely enough manner so that people get their needs met?
And so you said there's other things, you know, it goes beyond just raising the minimum wage. And what do you see is needed to, you know, help improve the economic status of the middle class? Because, I mean, that's kind of the platform of many Democrats in the country. And I mean, do you share that point of view?
I share that point of view, again, but there needs to be more thought put into it. One of the ways I think we can help that is healthcare, for example. Parity was something that I thought was very important to include mental health with physical health care. I think we need to add vision and dental to that. As I kind of described the background here, with many employers, they are finding that they are not able to afford health care benefits per the policies that are being offered to them from insurance companies. I've seen a dramatic increase in health care benefits on my own paycheck, for example, and it's kind of turned into case management for the business owner, and that's very uncomfortable for me. I think what may be helpful, well, obviously the Patient Protection Health Care Act, that reform that just recently got passed, it was passed premature. I don't feel they put enough time, energy, and thought into it to really look at how it's affecting people.
Are you talking about the Affordable Care Act, or?
Yes, that's another common way people refer to it, but there's the title for it is a little bit different.
Okay.
So
what would you like to see then with the Affordable Care Act? How do you think it could be improved then?
We need to remember why employers offered their employees benefits in the first place. The employee's job is to make money for the employer. Okay, that's the deal. The employer wanted to take care of the employee. Historically, this is how it appears to have happened. So they said, let me offer you these benefits to help you be able to perform better for me. It's a trade-off, what's in it for me, back and forth. It's become to this point where there has become other complications for people's health care, which have maybe caused some of the health problems, okay, depending on what the industry is. I think we need to take that burden off the employer and make national health care available for everyone. If a person wants more health care than what's available from the basic health care available, then get a supplement. I mean, that's what persons who have Social Security do. They have their basic, and if they're able to afford more, they can purchase a supplement. For me, I feel that, for example, the health care that we have in our state of Wisconsin, which is oftentimes called Badger Care, I don't need the Cadillac insurance health care. And I would challenge other congressional people and legislative people to say, if it's good enough for my neighbor, it's good enough for me. Because taking the burden of health care off the employer, for example, hopefully will free up funding so that they can give their employees a higher wage. And then the taxes that are reaped from those wages can go into that larger system.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to clarify one thing you said, because you said you don't need the Cadillac insurance. Were you likening Badger Care to a form of Cadillac insurance?
No. I'm referring to, like, what our legislative people are enjoying from their state benefits and federal benefits and, you know, those employees or those elected officials.
So in your mind, take the burden off the employer, provide a national health care system, and then that money that is saved by employers can go into promoting health and wellness of their workers?
That is correct. And people who are self-employed, when they pay their taxes out of their business, that would go into the pool too.
And so, you know, health care has been a really big deal since the Affordable Care Act was passed. I mean, it's faced several challenges. But I also wanted to ask you, too, about defense and military spending, because that's something that's come up more and more now as we've seen conflicts in the Middle East worsen, like the civil war in Syria and terror attacks in Brussels and Paris. And so where do you stand on military spending or defense?
It's a necessary expense. As much as we want to believe that our neighbors will be more kind and not do these terrorist attacks, they are. When 9/11 happened, I had the opportunity to go to Ground Zero. Again, kids in tow in the car, a situation had happened where a friend of mine's mother had passed away. She couldn't get to Boston. All the airports were shut down. Took her to Boston, swung over to New York City, and I did some volunteer debriefing. The trauma that people go through from terrorism, it's amazing. And then that contributes to our mental health, of course. People are scared. Their anxiety level is up. If our leaders could find a way to diffuse the hostility between the countries, then we wouldn't need to pack our guns, so to speak. But that's not where we're at.
And so you think there's been a failure in attempts at diplomacy?
Yes.
Why do you think that is? If that's how you see it, why are we not being able to diffuse these conflicts as, you know, perhaps an outside mediator of them? Or, I mean, is that even our role, you know, as the U.S.? I mean, of the world is a
That's a very good point. What I immediately think of is, like, when things were getting out of control for me economically and this, that, and the other thing, I decided to focus on myself and take care of my family. That's a lot of the reason why I did not continue to pursue legislative involvement in my early 30s. Because I was like, I need to step back and take care of what I have and raise my children. I don't think it would be a bad thing for the United States to say, wait a minute, we got to step back and take care of us so that we have a stronger us to compete in the world.
You've been listening to interviews with the three Democrats who've announced that they're vying for Congressman Sean Duffy's seat in the 7th District race. The primary election will be held on August 9th. That's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us next Monday. Until then, have a great rest of your week.